hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the car and dying to be. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the fort of God. If we don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the fog that I keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and those are, of course, the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and of course, all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Oh, well. Lots of interesting things happened over the last couple of days. Well, where will you begin? Probably one of, if not the most, horrific cases of mass murder in American history took place last night, Sunday night, in Las Vegas at a outdoor country and western concert, and a man got up on the 33rd floor, I think it was, of a hotel in downtown Las Vegas, just opposite where the concert was, and started shooting. And when you heard sent out by people on their cell phones, the sense of panic and the rapid fire shots, it actually, to my untrained ear, or I should say not terribly trained ear, but I have been around guns all my life, it sounded like machine gun fire. It just kept up and up and up, and then there might be a hiatus for a few minutes, and then, or maybe a minute, and then it would start up again. Now, the shooter was in the Mandalay Hotel, which was opposite the concert, and fired away. Some people think that the shooting went on for almost half an hour. When the SWAT team burst through his door, he was found dead. Now, the man identified as the shooter was 64-year-old Stephen Paddock. And you see a picture of him on the social media, and he's obviously white. We were told immediately that identification for a woman had been found in his room, and this woman turned out to be his girlfriend, 62-year-old Mary Lou Danley. But when you look at pictures of Mary Lou, Mary Lou is quite clearly Oriental. Anyway, she was tracked down and released. Apparently, they were not convinced that she had any involvement in the shootings. Okay, so that's interesting. Well, so superficially, a white man, for reasons unknown, decides to gun down, and the death toll now, when I went to bed at 6 a.m., that before it'd be 3 in the morning, Las Vegas time. But when I went to bed a little bit after 5, it was 28 dead and about 100 injured. It's now 500 injured and 58 dead, and the death toll will probably go higher. It's a horrific thing. All right, so that's what it would appear on the surface. White man, for whatever reason, decides just to go berserk and gun down as many people as he possibly can. And he's quite effective. He's firing from a high position into a crowd, a tightly packed crowd. It's the old saying is, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. Do we shoot fish in barrels? But it might be a better metaphor to say, it was a massacre. It was easy enough to do. Okay, well, and as Paul Harvey used to say, here's the rest of the story. And I, and this is from Freedom Daily, the conservative news. Here is the rest of the story. ISIS, that's the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, so the big terrorist group in the Middle East, is claiming responsibility. Very interesting. Now, some people might say, well, they'll do that simply for publicity. They'll take advantage of any unclaimed massacre like this and say, we did it. But that's actually not true. There are terrorist attacks in Europe that they did not take credit for because presumably they didn't do it. I would say they're taking credit for it is cause to pay some attention. Okay, well, it gets even more interesting. Apparently, Mr. Paddock has recently converted to Islam. Now, although his brother said, well, he never seemed particularly interested in politics or religion, but he admitted that he if not estranged, had not been close for many years. And the brother lives in Florida, and Paddock, the shooter, lived in Las Vegas, practically right across the continent. But he's a recent convert to Islam. And of course, more information has to be winkled out about this. His girlfriend recently visited the Middle East, visited the United Arab Emirates, if we're to believe something on her Facebook page. Obviously, there is more to meet the eye, and probably, I'd say there's strong reason to believe this is another example of Islamic terrorism. Oh yes, and of course we're going to be told, "Oh, you've got to be careful about Islamophobia." Well, I think, in the light of this story, and the story I'm going to share with you that comes from Canada, the terrorist attack in Edmonton, Alberta, on Saturday evening, there's every reason to be worried about the threat of Islam, and certainly the severe threat of radical Islam to us. Well, here's what Freedom News has to say, and some of this will be a bit repetitive, but I'm sorry, Freedom Daily has to say, some will be a bit repetitive, but it highlights the Islamic, the ISIS connection and the Islamic connection of this mass murder, apparently at this point 58 people with 500 injured. The world is reeling this morning after waking up to the gruesome news and footage from Las Vegas overnight when a gunman committed a premeditated massacre on a country and Western concert goers. The shooter, 64-year-old Stephen Paddock, is dead, and investigators were initially looking for his girlfriend as a person of interest. It took some time in finding her since she wasn't near the scene, but they were able to locate her and have since released her following questioning. There was no initial word about where Las Vegas police tracked down the 62-year-old girlfriend, Mary Lou Danley, although she is Oriental, at just where they tracked her down, or just what they found or found her, but they didn't believe that she was involved in the attack. However, now she's resurfaced somewhere else, and it's not looking too good for her, and everyone's wondering what the motive was behind the attack. Paddock reportedly checked into the Mandalay Bay Hotel on Thursday, 3 days before opening fire on hundreds of Route 91 music festival attendees. Police uncovered at least 10 rifles in Paddock's room, who was dead of a suspected self-inflicted gunshot when SWAT blew his hotel door open. Danley was nowhere to be found, but some of her identification was discovered on her dead boyfriend, who had used her information to check into the hotel. You wonder, you know, how does an obvious male check into a hotel using the ID of Mary Lou Danley? Are we in such an age of the transgender that nobody dares say, well, you don't exactly look like a Mary Lou? Well, it's not for me to judge. Although investigators cleared Danley of involvement in this horrific attack, there's a new round of questioning that needs to happen. It was reported that she was abroad at the time Paddock allegedly just snapped and committed his carefully planned act. Well, you know, she wasn't abroad. She was found somewhere in Las Vegas last night. Now the Islamic State is claiming responsibility for his actions, saying that he converted to Islam several months ago, and both the Independent and Yahoo News are reporting that. Well, what it seems, while it seems that this is a way for the terrorist organization to take glory for the mass murder, Mary Lou's whereabouts may have provided the photo proof to back this statement up. According to Newsweek, police monitoring the Las Vegas Strip had already been on high alert the last several months, since ISIS released a propaganda video of a plan of attack for this specific tourist spot. The Las Vegas Strip is relatively compact, very, very popular tourist magnet. And, you know, if you can scare people, first of all, there'll usually be a lot of people around, so that would provide a fairly rich target. But furthermore, it would be, to the extent that people become scared, this would be very damaging to the economy of Las Vegas and the state of Nevada. Mary Lou, it may be a free moment, a woman right now, but she made a recent trip to the United Arab Emirates. It's not indicated when the photo was taken, but appears to be recent, causing some to question if this trip was around the time that her boyfriend, and perhaps she, we don't know this, converted to Islam, and that may well be that, it may well be that what ISIS said is true. Police stated that Mary Lou was out of the country when they located her after the shooting. It wasn't indicated where she was abroad when they held her for questioning, which seems questionable in itself. Furthermore, to travel abroad, she'd need all manner of identification, some of which was found on her boyfriend in his hotel room. How she was able to get abroad is a little odd, but perhaps the timing of her trip was no coincidence, either for her safety or for Paddock, taking advantage of the time she was gone to commit the worst mass shooting in American history. Considering what the ISIS video urged followers to do, there seems to be more correlation to Paddock's method of attack and perhaps a motive. A 44-minute-long video from ISIS, released in May, showed footage of the Las Vegas Strip from 2015, calling on ISIS supporters to conduct attacks with knives and vehicles, and everyday weapons that supporters already have used many times in the West over the past several years. And they're easy to get, a nitrous. Buy one in any grocery store, department store, and a vehicle. If you don't own one, you can always rent one or steal one. And this was an instruction. The footage also showed New York City and Washington, D.C. I think the ISIS claims are credible. So this was probably a planned attack. Well, it was a planned attack. He didn't just snap one morning and go and do this. He moved into the hotel back on Thursday. Plan brought these guns with him, and that must have been a tremendous volume of ammunition, and then went about and did the deed. I know it's not nice to do this football story, but the football protests just get bigger and bigger, and this is a real divide. Now, Jamie Kelso and I were talking about this on the American Freedom Party show, which we do every Sunday afternoon from 3 to 6 Eastern Standard Time on republicbroadcasting.org. And this was one of our topics yesterday afternoon, and that was the protests against what a number of black players are doing in the National Football League, which is standing, kneeling during the national anthem instead of standing for it, as a social justice protest, or, well, who knows, they're just protesting, making Class A fools of themselves, and disrespecting the audience. And we mentioned and George from Maryland, who is our other co-host, has several times mourned the fact that football, which used to be almost entirely a white sport, is increasingly a black sport. Now, you can follow it, I suppose, if you want, but they're not our people. And people are going, or it's hoped that many whites will change their viewing habits, or their, in other cases, their attending habits, or their attendance habits, and hopefully break diminish the NFL. The NFL largely thrives because tens of millions of mostly white people watch the games on TV. That's really where the revenue is. And thousands more, tens of thousands more, go to football games and pay high admission prices to watch the game. If a significant minority stops doing that, these teams are really going to hurt. Well, this is an article that appeared Saturday in the National, in the Globe and Mail. And it said, the Tennessee Titans informed the NFL, the National Football League, that is, about death threats to Pro Bowl tight end Delanie Walker, who's a Negro, and his family because of anthem protests. The league said Friday its security department is investigating. Walker disclosed the threats Thursday night in a post shared on social media. Walker told fans upset by the protests that they didn't have to go to the games if they felt disrespected. Well, Thanks for telling us that, Delaney. I hope a lot of people make good on that. We had a discussion about it and have turned it over to the National NFL, and we'll let them deal with it. Coach Mike Mularkey said, "We're very comfortable and confident that it will all be settled. We did not make a big issue of it, but we are definitely aware of it. It's all out of our hands." Walker, that's the football player, the tight end for the Tennessee Titans, wrote, "The racist and violent words directed at me and my son only serve as another reminder that our country remains divided and full of hateful rhetoric." Racist and violent words, but we're not told what they were. "These words of hate will only fuel me in my efforts to continue my work, reaching out to different community groups, listening to opposing voices, and honoring the men and women of the armed forces who risk their lives every day that we may have this dialogue." Well, how's he doing that by refusing to stand for the national anthem? Walker isn't the only NFL player dealing with a backlash from protesting. Detroit Lions defensive tackle Akeem Spence, I guess he's a Negro too, said on Twitter on Thursday that because of his protests, his father, a contractor, was denied a job on a house. Spence was among the Lions who took a knee, knelt down, standing for the national anthem before their game in Atlanta. More than 150 people came out to Swansea, Massachusetts on Thursday night to throw Patriots t-shirts and other team apparel into a fire pit as they waved American flags and sang patriotic songs. So white people are beginning to fight back at these protests by overpaid, highly privileged Negro players who ought to be down on their knees, but not during the national anthem, thanking God for their good fortune to be able to make themselves millionaires playing the game of football. I had another item here that... Yes. John Ibbotson was getting all hot under the collar on Saturday in the Globe and Mail, saying a report on LGBT, that's lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. So report on LGBT purge shows Canada must do more. Alleged persecution in Azerbaijan. Now, you need a search warrant to find that place, but it's in the Caucasus Mountains. Used to be a republic of the Soviet Union, now is an independent country. Anyway, alleged persecution in Azerbaijan points to the need for Western countries to respond when governments attack sexual minorities. Well, apparently, in Azerbaijan, let's see what's happening here, or allegedly, human rights activists say Azerbaijan authorities have launched a purge against LGBT citizens. The latest persecution points to the need for Canada, says Mr. Ibbotson, and other Western countries to find ways to respond when governments attack sexual minorities within their own country. Apparently some homosexuals have been detained and some were beaten in verbal abuse. Apparently nobody killed. Okay. Well, let's assume it's true. A Turkic race in the kind of backward Muslims in Central Asia. Well, why would the persecution, assuming it's happening, of homosexuals or the LGBTQ crowd be of any concern to us? They're not our people. They're not our religion. I have an idea. Why doesn't a strict Muslim country like Saudi Arabia, why don't they take them in? or the Gulf states that are quite wealthy, or Iran, or Iraq, or even Turkey. I mean, they're fellow Muslims. Why don't they take them in? Or more liberal countries in terms of morality, like Indonesia, which is a wildly Muslim-majority country. Why must it be up to Canada or nations in the West? I don't think importing considerable numbers of LGBTQ exactly builds a nation. This is funny. On September 20th, an Azerbaijani newspaper reported that the opposition and Justice Party supported the crackdown on the LGBTQ. Quote, "The Western circles, who are the source of immorality and illness, who have been cursing God's name for a long time, have been devastating our national traditions under the name of human rights," the party leader, he's the opposition party leader, said on Google. The Ministry of Internal Affairs denies any purge, but told another publication that prostitutes and others of non-traditional sexual orientation had been briefly detained after complaints from local citizens and had been examined for the presence of sexually transmitted diseases. Well, that may or may not be true, but if it's true, it seems like a perfectly legitimate function of the state. And the Globe recently reported the Trudeau government secretly spirited several dozen gay Chechens. Now, Chechnya is another Central Asian, a former republic in the Soviet Union, who are at risk to Canada's refugees. A similar program may be required again, this time for Azerbaijan. So go to attitude. Now we're going to bring in, well, now there's pressure on the government to bring in some Azerbaijani LGBTQs. If the report is correct, if they really were prostitutes, street prostitutes or whatever, is this really a big benefit for Canada? I mean, there may have been perfectly reasonable and legitimate reasons for the Azerbaijani government to bring some of these characters in. Now, they may well have been roughed up. That's not a good thing. I don't approve, but other countries have different traditions. In many countries, for better or for worse, a visit to the police often means a beating. I don't agree. I don't approve. That's the way it is. But how does this become a Canadian issue? Why is this of any moment or interest to us? Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I'm going to take a short musical interlude, and recently I've been playing some songs by Rebel Sun. I'm going to play a couple tonight. I was going to play a couple tonight. Getting up here on my screen here. Rebel Sun, some of the lyrics of some of his songs are probably a little raunchy, but very hard-driving music, and I hope you like it. Very, very proudly a Southerner, and you know, we really need white pride. We really need expressions of pride in what we are and who we are. So this first song is called Mr. Confederate Man. I think this is a really charming little story, a little ballad.
I was just a little boy in elementary school, English and math and science class, learning the golden rule. I learned how to add and
learned how to subtract, how to multiply and divide. I learned about bugs and I learned about plants and I learned how to read and write. But my most favorite class of all was my last class of the day, when my history teacher would tell us tales of old times long gone away. I was amazed at the way she knew all the people and their names and the places and the dates. That's when I first learned about General Lee and his 13 rebel states. One day she came to school with a big brown grocery bag. She opened it up, we all helped her hold up this great big X-shaped flag. She said, "Class, now only a fool will tell you this flag is a symbol of hate. It represents the men who fought and died with pride for our Confederate States. Your assignment tonight, I want you to write, I want you to pretend that one of these brave men came back to life. Now what would you say to him?" Well, school bell rang and I thought as the bus carried me across town. I got out my pencil and my notebook pad, and this is what I wrote down. I wrote, "Mr. Confederate man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland. Mr. Confederate man." The next day in history class, I put my paper on the teacher's desk. Then she called me up in front of everyone because she said she liked mine the best. As I walked up to the head of the class, my teacher smiled and she nodded at me. Then I saw a tear roll down her cheek as I began to read. I read, "Mr. Confederate man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland. Mr. Confederate man." Well, I was at home reading through the news just the other day, when I ran across my old teacher's name and I saw she had passed away. With a bittersweet smile, I looked up at my wall, a wrinkled paper in an old wood frame, where underneath pencil words almost faded away, she had marked a great big red A. Plus, "Mr. Confederate man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland. Mr. Confederate man." I wrote, "Mr. Confederate man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland. Mr. Confederate man."
That's Rebel Son and Mr. Confederate Man. And I'm going to play another one by Rebel Son. This is Sitting Up Drinking with Robert E. Lee, Confederate Son.
Sitting up drinking up in my old Chevy riding through the sound. I looked up on the hill and I saw a big white house. I caught a glimpse of a bearded man polishing his sword. Well, I saw Robert E. Lee outside sitting on the porch. I pulled up in the yard and saw a cotton field out back. He invited me to sit with him and share a fifth of Jack. He had crisscross cars and 13 stars flying in the wind. He said, save your Confederate money, boy, cause the South will rise again. Did not like them Northerners one bit. He was a rebel and he knew it, and he didn't give a shit. We've been talking about Dixie and how old times used to be. And I've been sitting up drinking with Robert E. Lee. We talked about his troops and the rebel infantry and us 13 southern states that were living in infamy. As he took another swig of his Black Label whiskey, he said, that Yankee pride don't mean a damn thing to me. He spoke about his men and how they always fought so brave, and how they wove their sacred flag, those many lives they gave. He struggled to gain independence for his southern ground. He stood up for his cause and never wants to be back down. And Robert E. Lee did not like them Northerners one bit. He was a rebel and he knew it, and he didn't give a shit. We've been talking about Dixie and how old times used to be. And I've been sitting up drinking with Robert E. Lee.
Putting Up Drinking with Robert E. Lee. That's Rebel Sun. Gonna conclude our little musical interlude here with Jimmy Fortune. That was kind of a more religious slant. And this is a song made very popular in the late 70s by June Carter Cash and Johnny Cash. And this is a gospel song, The Far Side Banks of Jordan, sung by Jimmy Fortune. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
I believe my steps are growing wearier each day. Still I've got a journey on my mind. The lures of this old world have ceased to make me want to stay. My one regret is leaving you behind. But I'll be waiting on the far side banks of Jordan. Sitting drawing pictures in the sand. And when I see you coming, I will rise up with a shout and come running through the shallow waters, reaching for your hand. If it proves to be his will that I am first to cross, somehow I'll feel that it will be. When it comes your time to travel, likewise don't feel like, for I will be the first one that you'll see. And I'll be waiting on the far side banks of Jordan. I'll be sitting drawing pictures in the sand. And when I see you coming, I will rise up with a shout and come running through the shallow waters, reaching for your hand. Through this life we've labored hard to earn our meager fare. It's brought us trembling hands and failing eyes. So I'll just rest here on this shore and turn my eyes away. Until you come and we'll see paradise. But I'll be waiting on the far side banks of Jordan. Pictures in the sand. And when I see you coming, I will rise up with a shout and come running through the shallow waters, reaching for your hand. And I'll be waiting on the far side banks of Jordan. I'll be sitting drawing pictures in the sand. When I see you coming, I will rise up with a shout and come running through the shallow waters, reaching for your hand. And I'll be running through the shallow waters, reaching for your hand.
And that's Jimmy Fortune. The Far Side Banks of Jordan. And this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada and the United States of America. Well, here's a story. And you know, I try to exercise some degree of Christian charity. but believe me, it's not easy. And by that, well, this is a great story of how the revolution eats its own. Yeah, I've got to say, I think it's fun. How the revolution eats its own. Yeah, I know I shouldn't laugh, should I? Not very nice tonight. On the other hand, it couldn't happen. So, okay. There is a madness, a fanatical, destructive madness about anti-racism. And this story will remind you a little bit of an occurrence in George Orwell's amazing novel, 1984. And that was called The 5 Minutes of Hate, the Daily Hate, where the people would stop work, stand up, and on the prompting of some big, huge TV screen, would be screaming, hate, 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 at whatever the target was. The targets were often yesterday's leaders. So anyway, here's the story. Massey College, an independent residential college affiliated with the University of Toronto, has temporarily suspended the formal title of master to refer to its head, that's like the principal, and has apologized for an incident earlier this week that deeply offended and hurt members of the school. when you hear the story, you've got to say, well, how many people were actually really deeply hurt and deeply offended? Master is borrowed from the from the phraseology in Oxford and Cambridge, and it refers not to somebody who lords it over somebody else, but rather a person who has mastered or is very proficient in a particular subject. Anyway, the story continues. The remarks made this week, or this is a statement, the remarks made this week by a member of our community were completely inappropriate. Oh boy, there's that politically correct term of dismissal and abuse. Totally inappropriate. And I deeply regret the distress they caused to members of our community, said Hugh Siegel. He's Jewish. He turns out he's the master or the head of the college. And he said, put this statement out. In addition, the University of Toronto has issued a statement condemning the deeply offensive remarks. Okay. The incident happened at a lunch that was attended by 3 junior fellows of Massey and Emeritus Professor of History Michael Morris, a senior fellow. Now, junior fellows would be young scholars. Now, one of them was black, so it's a lunch, and there are these 3 junior scholars there, and Michael Morris. Now, Maris, you have to understand, is a heavy hitter in the Holocaust. No, he didn't do the Holocaust, whatever that was, but he wrote a lot of books about it, so he's well-known, well-established. Now, I'm not saying I agree with his books, of course, but you've got to understand, he's a senior scholar, in quotation marks, written a lot of books, big reputation, often has contributed opinion columns to the papers like the Globe and Mail. Hugh Siegel, that's this Jewish guy, the head of the college, or the master, decided to join the table. At that moment, Dr. Maris remarked to a black junior fellow, quote, "You know this is your master, eh? Do you feel the lash?" That's the remark. "Has your heart skipped a beat? Have you... Have you begun to go into convulsions on the floor with the sheer drama of it, the sheer weight?" I'll read it to you again. This is the remark. So this old retired professor, Professor Maris, who's written all these books on the Holocaust, says to the young Negro junior fellow, he says this, "You know, this is your master," pointing to Hugh Siegel. "Eh? Do you feel the lash?" Now, that's the remark. Now, I'm sure nobody in this audience has to be told it was an attempt at humor. They're all politically correct. No, Hugh Siegel wasn't going to persecute the black They're like, no, was he going to take out his belt and wail on him? This was just a joke. Dr. Maris, a noted scholar of the Holocaust, well, I guess I already mentioned that, is retired from the university but has a senior fellowship at Massey College. The students at the table also have not spoken about their feelings, but they've lodged a written complaint. A petition supporting the students was signed by almost 200 faculty and students. Now, to put that in context, there are about 40,000 students at the University of Toronto, so 200 is not that impressive. What did the petition ask? It asked for a formal public apology from the institution, the replacement of the title of master, and anti-racist training for all members of the Massey College community. Send them off to political re-education. Put them in a can. Send them out. This is Maoism. During the Great Cultural Revolution in China, when Mao decided to shake things up a bit, long-time cadres or members of the party were sent in humiliation out to labor camps to labor with the peasants to get their hands dirty. Well, you know, they want everybody here at that Massey College to have anti-racist training. Well, what's anti-racist? It's anti-white. They want a formal apology from the college. Well, why would the college apologize? The college didn't say anything. Michael Morris said something. And they don't want that title master anymore for the principal. They want, I don't know what they want. Head, principal, chief bongo banger. I mean, it's insane. And they go on to say, or the petition goes on to say, in our eyes, the very legitimacy of Massey College hinges on the effectiveness of your response to this incident. We encourage you to approach this moment with the seriousness it demands and with the courage and vision to make this occasion for a fulsome transformation. They want their college to transform itself. Talk about pompous enemies of freedom. Anyway, the college was in full retreat. Hugh Siegel, he's the Jew, says, and so is Morris, words and statements like this in no way reflect the position of Massey College as a whole. There's no place for overt, chocular, or subtle racism here. What's that racist? It is picking up on master, slave, ha-ha, and the fact that Hugh Siegel is the master of, it might not be the funniest joke that was ever told, but come on, this is not racism. And then don't forget, in this statement, Siegel is denouncing a fellow very well respected in academia, not necessarily by me, Jew. The remarks are absolutely incompatible with the University of Toronto's commitment to equity, diversity, and inclusion. Well, obviously not diverse opinions or inclusion of, well, perhaps a guy with not the sharpest sense of humor. And with our goal of providing an environment for our students, faculty, and staff that is free of racism and other forms of discrimination, said Kelly Hannah Moffat, U of T's Vice President of Human Resources and Equity. Okay, well, that was Saturday's paper. Today, it turns out that this this guy Morris, M-A-R-R-U-S, has officially resigned. Michael Morris, the history professor whose racially offensive remarks led to a public controversy at the University of Toronto's Massey College, has submitted his resignation as a senior fellow. But he says he's disheartened by the lack of dialogue between him and those who asked for his resignation. Yeah, he's directly apologized to the Negro who made the remarks to, where was the due process, he whines? Where was the effort to hear me out? Where was the effort to relate to 30 years of scholarship that have a lot to do with human rights? There was something cruel and reckless about this campaign, he said. Yeah, I agree with him. But it's the sort of fanaticism that you and your type have started. The witch hunt against people who have different ideas about the so-called Holocaust. Well, now it's coming back to bite you. He said he contacted the Negro, but he wouldn't accept his apology. Quote, I'm so sorry for having wounded anyone, said Morris, but nothing availed. Anyway, I'm going to have to try to tell this caller to the decision to resign is the best one for me and the best one for my family, and the best one for the students who are so angry. If so many people have announced that they don't want me at Massey College, why should I persist? I understand the anti-racist commitment of the people who have mobilized, he says. I feel uncomfortable citing all the work that I've done, but I have, and no one seems interested in it or interested in me. To be treated as a non-person is so wounding and so cruel. If you want to know about racism, what racism is, it's to treat someone as a non-person. Well, I don't. That may be a definition. However, this is the fruit of anti-racism. And, he's been a long-time anti-racist, Holocaust studies promoter, and so on and so on. This is the fanatics eating their own. And as I say, I don't take pleasure in anybody's sufferings, but you've got to say, in some ways, it serves them right. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the funny side of me here on RightResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow. I sign off, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever.